want to take a quick moment to thank Rabbi Zatz. Rabbi Zatz had texted me asking me when we are davening mincha here today so that we could do him a service of getting him a mincha minyan that does not threaten shkia, does not... I'm like, oh, Rabbi Zatz is coming. So once he's here, we're putting him to work. So he was so graciously agreed to share Dibrei Torah. Obviously, Rabbi Zatz is a Marbitz Torah on many different levels in the community, in Teaneck, in the Shul, in the Yeshurin, as well as in our yeshiva, Yeshiva University, and he's a very beloved Rebbe, and I'm sure many of you have heard his Torah before, and you understand why, and those who have not yet heard his Torah are in for a treat, and will understand why it is that he's so beloved, and his Torah is so beloved, and we're so grateful for him to be mechazek us here on Shavuos Ketanos.
Thank you, Rabbi Leibowitz, for the overly kind introduction and for the invitation. It's much easier to be speaking at this time of the day than to be listening. So I look forward to the opportunity to learn a little bit. I'll try to keep it a little bit light. I know it's the end of a tainus. And I really want to put together a few different thoughts that I've had over the years related to the 3 weeks, and hopefully with some practical, at least hashkafic, insights that we could take with us over the course of the next 3 weeks. Sinas chinam, baseless hatred. We're taught from the youngest of ages that sinas chinam destroyed the base of Mikdash. The Gemara Yuman, Daf Tes Amud Beis, the Gemara tells us, Ava Mikdash Sheni Sheyoskim Batorah Ava Mitzvos Ugmilas Chasadim. In the second base of Mikdash, they had so much going right, and they were learning, and they were involved in mitzvos. They were even involved in chesed, gemilas chasadim, but mipnei macharib. So why was the Beis HaMikdash destroyed? Says the Gemara, mipnei shehaisavo sinas chinam, because of sinas chinam. What does that mean? What does that mean? It's pretty astounding also if you think about it, because I think generally speaking, we view ourselves as being pretty good. We have what to work on, but we're davening and we're learning and we're doing chesed. We're thriving, and yet, with a deficiency of sinas chinam, it warrants the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. So what is sinas chinam? What does it mean, baseless hatred? What does it mean to hate someone for no reason? It doesn't make any sense. I don't know you, and I hate you. Why? There's just something wrong with the person who hates somebody for no reason. And this was so pervasive that it led to the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. What are we talking about? No one hates someone for no reason. So what does sinas chinam mean? And it's very, very important for us to define it, because there's a well-known Yerushalmi at the beginning of the Maseches Yoma that tells us that in any generation in which the Beis HaMikdash was not rebuilt, it is as if it was destroyed. And we have to understand and be clear as to what that means. That means that if we had the Beis HaMikdash standing right now where that Dome of the Rock is, and Kohanim b'avodasam u'leviyim b'shiram u'bezimram offering the Korbanos, then at this very moment, one of the nations of the world would come in and destroy our Beis HaMikdash. Because the fact that it's not there means that we are right now deserving of it being destroyed. We sometimes think changing the status quo is more difficult than just maintaining it. That's not true when it comes to the Ribono Shalom. It is no more difficult for him to uproot the dome and put the Beis HaMikdash there right now than to destroy it if it was already standing. It makes no difference. So when Chazal tell us that there is something about a generation in which the Beis HaMikdash is not rebuilt, that it is as if it is Charev, and that's something that we need to really understand. The Chofetz Chaim once said, you can probably imagine, if someone announced right now a major capital campaign to fund the building of the third Beis HaMikdash. Let's put it at $1 billion. And they do one of these matching, and you get three people and three times, and every donation is tripled. How long do you think it would take Klal Yisrael to raise $1 billion for the Beis HaMikdash? 12 hours? 24 hours? A few days? Maybe a little tumult as to who's going to have their name on the kiyor and who on the menorah. But once you get past all of that, they would be able to do it. with, again, an exorbitant amount of money. And yet, the Ribbono Shel Olam tells us, you don't need to raise any money for it. Just get rid of Senes Chinam. And the Beis HaMikdash will come back. And it's been 2,000 years, and we're just not able to do it. So what is this Senes Chinam? What makes it so difficult? And what perhaps can we do a little bit differently this year to do our part in rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash? So maybe the best place to start is the episode that the Gemara tells us, referencing the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. And with that, maybe we can understand what existed then, what that deficiency was, and then see how we can apply that. So the Gemara, Gittan Dapnin A, tells us a well-known story of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa. There was a man, interestingly, never identified in the story, who threw a party, and he intended to invite his good friend Kamsa. And he gave his servant the job, the task of going out in order to make sure that the invitations would go to those who should be summoned to the party. And mistakenly he erred, and he invited his enemy, Bar Kamsa. And the Balabayas, the host, realized the mistake at the party. He immediately approached Bar Kamsa and demanded that he leave. Get out of here. And obviously embarrassed, Bar Kamsa made several offers and overtures to try and settle the issue in a way that would not be embarrassing for everybody. Let him stay. I'll pay for the entire party, he says to him at the end. Just let me stay. I shouldn't be embarrassed by having to leave right now. And the Gemara recounts, and the Balabayas said, no, get out. And he threw him out of the party. And the Gemara recounts that Bar Kamsa was so offended by the callousness of this person, how he treated him, how there were Chachmei Yisrael who were there, who were quiet, that he slandered the Jewish people to Kesar. One thing leads to another, the details of the story, not so important for right now, and ultimately to the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Now the Gemara introduces a story by telling us that Yerushalayim was chorev because of what happened with Kamsa and Bar Kamsa. And in light of the actual unfolding of the story and what happened, the inclusion of Kamsa in this statement is actually very surprising. After all, Kamsa was not even at the party. Right? He's this shadow figure which emerges in this tragic event. What role did he play in this incident to deserve? But apparently seems like some criticism as well. Ben Yehoyada suggests that this is a misreading of the introduction to the Gemara. And the Talmud does not mean in any way, shape, or form to criticize Kamsa, because it makes no sense to criticize him. He's not a participant. But rather included its name to teach us the larger lesson of the story. Because in the final analysis, the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash was caused by something as minor as the confusion of the names of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa. And that's what the introductory phrase is telling us, that it was chorev because of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa, because of the Bar, because of that little difference. But it could be so important and so significant to somebody that the events can unfold the way that they did. And at the time of the initial mistake, we might have easily dismissed it as nothing more than trivial, inconsequential, just a mistake. Okay, the servant didn't listen so carefully and made a little error. After all, what are the odds that one person has a friend and an enemy, and one's Kamsa, and one's Bar Kamsa? Marsha has a suggestion that it was a father and a son. But what are the chances this would happen? But again, if you look at the story, there's plenty of hatred in the story. Plenty of hatred in the story. But how did the story indicate anything about hatred without any reason at all? Sinas chinam, baseless hatred. Where is that in this episode? We're not told at all why the host, while the Balabayas, why he hates Bar Kamsa. He certainly, in the end of the story, wrongs Bar Kamsa. Bar Kamsa clearly, at least by the time the story is over, hates him as well. But for more or less good reason, as we would say. And all those present were simply complicit by not saying anything. There's nothing baseless in the episode, in the story that the Gemara, the Chazal, are relating to us. What seems to be is that the message that Chazal were trying to convey and what the story is about is how we respond when we are insulted or when we are wrong. And even if perhaps, there is a valid reason to be upset, to show hatred, how do we then respond? How do we respond? Sinas chinam does not mean baseless hatred. It means unwarranted hatred. And the two are very different. There is an impetus. There is something which could potentially lead me to be upset at you and maybe for it even to rise to the point of being hatred. But it's not a good reason. And that, perhaps, is a bit more relatable. That's where most machlokas comes from. Machlokas is such a terrible thing, and people become embroiled, and they're not thinking clearly. We act irrationally. Just look at Korach. The Chiddush Yarim points out the lunacy of his arguing that Moshe and Aaron were not chosen by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That was baseless. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu had told Korach himself that he had picked Moshe and Aaron, Korach still wouldn't have accepted it. It wasn't that Korach thought this was really the case. He was being pushed. He had an agenda. And that's what was driving him. But we're blinded when we get into the throes of Machlokas. Pinchas in this week's parasha stops the plague. He's a hero. But Rashi comments at the very beginning, but people attacked him. They shamed him, his lineage, back to Yisro, Putiel, Shepitim, Agolim, Avodah Zarah. What was his response? Nothing. Nothing. But he was wronged. He was insulted. Where's the response of Pinchas? Nothing. Because it doesn't mean that being insulted necessarily warrants a response. What does it help? What does it help to be angry? What does it help to have this hatred towards another person? There's a story more recently of a Jew who ran a smear campaign, it's hard to imagine, against Rav Moshe Feinstein. Great Rav Moshe Feinstein. He wrote letters and articles publicizing his propaganda and attacking Rav Moshe, some of his psakim. It was in Elul and Rav Tuvia Goldstein, the great Talmud of Rav Moshe, and Posig, Chabar of Emek Halacha, was walking into Rav Moshe's apartment, and out of Rav Moshe's apartment, he sees this guy, the one who everybody knows has been insulting and attacking Rav Moshe. So Rav Tuvia walks in and got the better of him. He said to Moshe, "Nu," he finally came and he asked Mechila. And Rav Moshe didn't say anything. He says, "Nu," and Rav Moshe smiled. And he said, I don't, it's Rosh Hashanah, I'm sure he came to clear this up, to ask for Mechila. And Rav Moshe explained, he came to ask for a letter. He lost his job, and he needed a letter as a reference saying something nice about him. Right, but he asked for forgiveness first, right? And Rav Moshe just smiled. What does it help to hold on to it? Another Jew is in need. Is there a potential impetus for me to withhold? Yes. But why? Why? What is that going to accomplish? That's the sinas chinam to avoid. To learn to overlook things. Not to keep a scorecard of who we're angry at. I met somebody once who talked to me, he was going through why he's angry at this one and that one, this one. I said, you might have to write it down the whole cup at who you're angry at. Like, what are you doing to yourself? Why? Doesn't make any sense. That's the sinas chinam to avoid. And the truth is, this trait is a very special need that we have. We live in a time when everybody's looking for a skula. A skula for this and a skula for that. Everybody's asking always about checking the mezuzahs. I said, I have no idea checking mezuzahs help. But I guarantee you, if you're more medactic on something that's hard for you, that can't hurt. Ribono Shel Olam, that for sure, he'll find favor in. But there's a school that the Gemara tells us. Gemara Rosh Hashanah, and Daf Yud Zayin tells us that Amar Rava, Kol Ma'avir Amidosa Ma'avirin Lo Al Kol Peshav. If a person is willing to overlook the wrongs that are done to him, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to be Ma'avir Al Kol Peshav. He's going to pass over his Peshoim. Rashi explains that being Ma'avir Amidosa means to not calculate the exact measure of what a person deserves. The person did this, oh, so then I need to respond this way. Not everything has to be so exact. Now, Rashi does not say you shouldn't feel any pain. He doesn't feel you should say you shouldn't feel slighted. It's okay. But as Rashi says, Meiniach midosav olecho, you felt it a little bit. Okay, now put it on the side and give iter. Move on. It doesn't help to hold on to it. That's being ma'avir abavir amidosav. We naturally feel, we emote, it's okay. It's normal. But it's what we do with it afterwards is where we're challenged. Why is it that this person's sins are forgiven? There are so many positive traits that exist. What's so special that the Ribono Shel Olam here forgives our chatoim? So Rabbi Yonah explains that the greatness of this midah relative to other ones is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu judges us midah keneged midah. And therefore there is a spectrum onto which we can be judged. With the midah sadin, there's a rachamim shebedin, there's a din shebedin. And if we show HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we think the appropriate way to judge other people is with rachamim, because that's how we interact with them, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, okay, you've accepted that mode of judgment, I will act with you in that way as well. And that's what gives us, again, it's a midah keneged midah. It's not a magic trick. It's never a magic trick. It's not a magic trick. But if we show HaKadosh Baruch Hu that that's what just is, and that we're willing to overlook the wrongs that are done to us, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu does the same to us. But it's really hard. In the moment, it is very difficult to control emotions. It's not always rational. Sometimes when we're caught up and we feel the heat of the moment, it's not so easy to overcome it. So yes, that's an important approach. It's something to keep in mind. But I don't know that that is going to help us eradicate any sin as chinam. I think the approach that we need to try to take is to preemptively do for others. If we increase the ahava, if we increase the love between people, our relationships with other people, we give to people even when unwarranted. And olam chesed yibana, the chesed that we do can build and create worlds. Because we'll have deeper bonds with people, and when you have somebody that's close to you that does something, you give it a little bit more leeway before it bothers you, the same way as if it's somebody from the outside. Create those relationships. And then our negative encounters will be different. Look for chances to do chesed for other people who would appreciate it. Even look to do chesed anonymously. Nobody needs to know. Nobody needs to know who cleaned up the floor in the bunk and got the new roll of toilet paper or threw out the garbage. But you're still a Baal chesed. And it creates you into a kind of person who's looking to build the bonds with other people. I want to share with you an amazing story. Incredible story. It's a story, a very simple Sephardi Jew. His name was Ben-Zion Saviv. Ben-Zion Saviv. And his yearning when he was in Eretz Yisrael, beginning of the founding of the state, was he wanted to create a moshav where it would be that Torah, Talmidei Chachamim, would be at the center of everything. And he went to the Chazon Ish, and the Chazon Ish gave him a bracha and encouraged him, create this moshav, a place where Torah is at the center, covered for Talmidei Chachamim. And he founded Ramat Pinchas, and after that, Or Yehuda, and they're both still located near where the Shiva Medical Center is. And he had a minhag. There were shiurim that were given because this was a real makom Torah. But he didn't grow up learning. He couldn't understand the Torah that was being taught. He didn't have the background. But he wanted to be in the room. He wanted to be part of the Avira. He wanted to be able to be Meshamesh Talmidei Chachamim. So he had a minhag. When the shiurim were given, he couldn't understand, but he would walk around serving everyone tea. He wanted to show the chashivus of Torah. But he had a minhag that he would only give half a cup of tea, no matter what. And it drove people crazy. And they go, Nu Ben Sion? Can I have a little more tea? No. We wouldn't give them. And they would call him cheap, and they would yell at him, I don't understand. It's just water. Why are you so cheap? What's wrong with you? Never more than half a cup of tea. Nobody understood. Made no sense. Everything else, he's always so giving. When it comes to his tea, he just can't part with it. And there was a period of time when he felt ill. So his son, Moshe Saviv, figured he should take over the minhag of giving the tea. The people were there learning. They wanted their tea while they were learning. And then he realized, I finally can get everybody to stop talking about my father. I'm going to pour everybody a full cup of tea. And he stopped by his father to see how he was doing. And his father said to him, are you going to make sure that everybody has tea? He goes, yes. It's great. And he's walking out. As the guy goes, well, Moshe, don't forget. Only half a cup of tea. He's like, Abba, I don't understand. What's it with you and the tea? And his father said, I'll tell you why, but you have to promise me never, you're never going to tell anyone. And at his father's levaya, he revealed the secret of the half a cup of tea. But he first, when he told us over at the levaya, he recounted an episode from a few years prior. Ben Sion Saviv was very sick and he was in Shari Tzedek Hospital. He had a pulmonary problem. And they needed a very strong IV medication in order to clear this out of his system. But it had very strong side effects. So what they would do is they would give half a dose. And then after the half a dose, they would see if a person needs to have more of it or not. They gave him the dose. And after only half of whatever he was supposed to get, the machine stopped working. Stopped working in the middle. And they tried getting the machines to get going again. They could not get it to work. But they saw that he started getting better. And they realized that the medication that they've been giving everybody for too long, even though it was only half of that was the amount they really needed. And the amount of side effects and things that were happening to people. But because they were giving too much medication. So my father was saved and others were saved because of this. What's his zechus? Is it coincidental that half the dose, the machine stopped working and the half a cup of tea? He said, no. He said, what's the secret to the half a cup of tea? He said, when his father started giving out the tea, he noticed that there were some elderly men who were sitting there learning. And their hands were shaking. And he realized if he filled up the cup of tea all the way, then they would spill on themselves, they would spill on the Gemara, and they would be embarrassed. But he realized that if he didn't fill up only a full cup of tea for the people who were young and healthy and half a cup for the older people, they would also feel embarrassed. So he said, no one's getting more than half a cup of tea because no Jew is going to be embarrassed because of me. I'm going to get bizyonis. I don't care if I get bizyonis. No Jew should ever be embarrassed. Because you don't think that I knew what everybody was saying about me. He said, I don't care. That unwavering selfless chesed in his lifetime with half a cup of tea ended up saving his life later. That's the unwavering chesed of being sensitive to what can I possibly do to make somebody else's life a little bit better, a little bit more pleasant. And we'll just conclude with one final point. Eicha begins, Eicha Yashva Badad. Talks about the sadness of Yerushalayim, sitting Badad, sitting alone. What's interesting though, is it's clear in the Psukim that Badad, being alone, is something which is not a good thing. It's a negative. But we just read yesterday, in the brachos that Bilam gave to Klal Yisrael, seems to be there's a praise of Hein Am Levadad Yishkon. That there's an element of being Badad, of being alone, which is a blessing. And we have it at the end of Ezos HaBrach also, Vayishkon Yisrael Betach Badad. Somehow, there are two types of being alone. There's an alone with a loneliness where everything hurts. And then there's a loneliness where we can focus in maybe on the person that we're with and connect. We don't always have to be connected, but it's a challenge. Because Revolbi writes that the word chayim, usually in Lashon HaKodesh, a yud and a mem sofis, it takes a singular word and makes it into the plural. Like regel, raglayim, ayin, einayim. There is no singular for chayim, even though it has that same form. Chay is to be alive. It doesn't mean life. Because our life is always inextricably bound. There is no life when we're completely separate. And the alone that we need to try to create is much more of an alone, which is a positive one. That you see sometimes you'll have a young couple, and they're so in sync with one another, they can ignore everything else that's going on around them. They have this ability to be alone and at the same time be together in a beautiful way. And the Ahavas Yisrael that we have to try to create is to connect to others, to think about their pain, to try and figure out what we can do to make everybody a bit more comfortable. And as we go through this period of the Bein HaMetzarim, it's an opportunity to get closer. It's an opportunity to get closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And when we can do that, when we understand that Sinas Chinam is not about baseless hatred for no reason, but it's about how we respond, camp is that perfect opportunity to be able to do it for others. We're somewhat badad, you guys. You're here by yourselves. You're sitting as a group learning. But at the same time, you're together. The more you build those relationships with another, create an atmosphere of Ahava and Chesed and giving, then hopefully that will be a step which will lead us, and it will come from here and out to the rest of the world, and that hopefully the same way that we will experience the mourning that we have right now, that will be Zocha to the Bracha, that everybody who mourns for Yerushalayim will be Zocha v'ro'a b'simchasa.